You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, Brewers Edition. MLB.com's Mark Feinsand recently caught up with Brewers General Manager David Stearns to discuss his fast track to the GM's office, what it's like turning over half of your 40-man roster in one offseason, and what he learned from working for Mark Shapiro and Jeff Luhnow.
So David, while you attended Harvard, you interned with the Pirates. At what age did you decide that you wanted to pursue a career in baseball?
I've been fortunate that I knew I wanted to work in baseball for a really long time, probably since I was in high school. I think when you're a kid and you first think about staying attached to the game, you think about playing the game. I realized late high school, certainly early college, that that was not going to be an option for me, and that I needed to find a different way to stay in the game. And so once that became clear, I began sending out letters to everyone I could possibly find. A couple of them were nice enough to return those letters, and ultimately the Pirates gave me an internship.
How'd you land your first full-time job?
Yeah. So my path was a little bit of a bumpy one at first, where I interned for the Pirates for two summers while I was in college. After I graduated college, I got a job at the Arizona Fall League, which is a sort of a term. You know there's going to be an expiration date on that job because
right.
when the league ends, you're out of
jobs.
A job.
Right.
And so the league ended, and so did my job. And then I got another internship with the Mets, a full-year internship, and that led to a full-time job at the commissioner's office.
For a kid growing up in New York City as a Mets fan, was that a dream come true to go work at Shea Stadium, I guess, at the time?
It was Shea, and it was, it was a great experience. The Mets had some really good teams at that time in 2007, 2008, and so to experience that excitement at Shea Stadium, to be able to go to work in a building that I used to do everything I could to possibly just get in there when I was a kid was pretty cool, and I learned a lot as well. There were some really good people there who took me under their wing, from Omar Minaya, John Rico, Adam Fisher, guys who really cared about developing people, and they helped me really move along.
You mentioned your time in the commissioner's office. When I was speaking to Matt Klentak, he said his experience there, especially working in labor relations, was as good of a platform for a career in baseball as anything that he could possibly imagine. What did you take most from that job?
So I think what the benefit of working at the commissioner's office, regardless of what the capacity is that you're working there, is you get to look at the game from a macro view. When we're at clubs now, we're so focused on our individual team circumstance. We're so focused on how we maximize wins and losses for our individual team. At the commissioner's office, I got a greater appreciation for the challenges and opportunities facing the industry as a whole. I got to work with some really bright people. Throughout my time there, I got to participate in a collective bargaining negotiation, and all of that gave me an appreciation for how robust this industry is, how many different arms and people there are working to ensure a prosperous future for the industry. And it also helped certainly my critical thinking skills, looking at big problems and trying to come up with appropriate solutions. So I'd certainly agree with Matt on that one. It's a wonderful place to work. When I was there, I thought I was going to be there, or hoped I was going to be there, for a very long time. And some other opportunities came along and allowed me to go work for a club.
Plus, you got to work with the guy who's now the commissioner, and that's probably not a bad thing to know him pretty well either.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt. And between the commissioner and Dan Halem and Morgan Sword and Chris Marinac, Chris Park, a lot of people who I had the opportunity to work with there, really bright people, learned a lot from all of them, and still good friends.
You went on, I feel like I've asked this question to almost everybody that I've spoken to, you went on to work with Mark Shapiro in Cleveland. What did you learn most from him?
The entire Cleveland front office there devotes itself to producing an extremely collaborative and cooperative culture. And certainly that started with Mark. It probably, frankly, even started before him with John Hart. And the lineage that worked through there. And so that's most of what I took away from Cleveland was the importance of culture, the importance of having everyone within a baseball operations department feel as though they're a part of what's going on in the major league field, and have ownership over the ultimate success of the franchise. There are a lot of people in throughout baseball that work incredibly hard, make real sacrifices to work in the game, and to make sure that all of those people feel a part of the action, a part of the decision-making process. I think Cleveland does that about as well, if not better, than anyone in the industry. And so seeing that firsthand was very instructive for me.
You moved on to Houston after Cleveland, working with Jeff Luhnow. He tabbed you as a potential GM in an interview in 2015. Was that always your goal? Was GM sort of your end game? Yeah. Or at least, maybe not end game, but at least your goal for that point?
My goal when I got into the game was to get to a level where I was able to contribute to wins and losses on the field. That's what mattered to me. I wanted to be involved in player personnel decisions. It's pretty tough to look at this and say, I want to be a GM and that's my end goal. There are only 30 GMs. So that's a challenging bar necessarily to set. But I knew I was going to be happy if I could get to a place in an organization that I respected and trusted and was able to help influence on-field decisions. I was able to do that, and now obviously have been able to become a general manager, which has been great. But I certainly, when I started out, I never said to myself, I need to become a general manager in order to be happy in the game.
The Astros front office is one of the more diverse in terms of the background of the people there. Got a guy who worked for NASA, got a guy who worked for Baseball Prospectus. So there's the whole spectrum there. How important is it to have those differing views among the staff that's helping to make the decisions?
I think it's important throughout the entirety of an organization to have diversity in backgrounds, diversity in skill sets, diversity in perspectives. We can get in a bubble occasionally in baseball. There can be some groupthink in baseball. And having people in your organization in a variety of different capacities who can look at your problems with an outside perspective certainly helps come to the most appropriate, it helps you get to the most appropriate solutions. And I think that's something that Houston has done very well, is set up a front office and really an entire baseball operations infrastructure that draws on skills from a variety of different industries and a variety of different backgrounds.
You were hired by the Brewers at the age of 30, becoming the youngest GM in the game at the time. Was it difficult at all starting that job and having to deal with GMs who, some of whom had been doing their jobs as long as you'd been alive?
Yep. I was fortunate that through my work in the commissioner's office, frankly, even starting with my job search when I was in high school and college, I had interacted with a lot of the other GMs or a lot of the other assistant general managers in baseball before. So I knew the vast majority of them to some extent, a segment I knew very well. So I never really looked at it as a hindrance. I think everyone is really coming at the discussions between general managers with very similar agendas. We need to do what's in the best interest of our organization. For the most part, everyone's very respectful of that. Everyone understands that the person on the other end of the phone is working really hard to do what they can for their organization. So I never felt that challenge because I was the new guy on the block or I was the youngest guy. Everyone treated me with respect, and certainly I have a great deal of respect for the other general managers out there.
You also were, and I guess still are, younger than some of your players.
Yep.
Is that ever odd?
No, it really isn't. I've always, throughout my career, I've always been on the younger side for positions that I've been hired for, and it's never really proven to be a hindrance. I think people generally, once they get to know me, understand what I'm about, that I'm about doing the best job we possibly can for the Brewers. And players seem to respect that, coaches seem to respect that, and I haven't really seen that as a major challenge so far.
When you took the job, you said, quote, "I would not have come here if I didn't think it was possible to win a World Series in Milwaukee." Is that easier to believe after you see a team like the Royals get to the World Series a couple years in a row and win one?
Well, I think any general manager going into a new job has to believe that you're able to win a World Series, or else there's no reason to go there. We're all in this to win championships. That's why we want to be here. We've seen over the past decade that well-run organizations, organizations that stick to a consistent philosophy and a plan, can have success regardless of market size. You mentioned Kansas City; they're a great example of that. Cleveland, I think, is a great example of that. Tampa is a great example of that. Oakland, at periods, Minnesota at periods, has been a great example of that. There are a number of organizations that have managed to compete consistently despite middle or smaller markets, and we see no reason why we can't do the same.
You turned over 20 of your 40 spots on your 40-man roster in your first offseason. How daunting of a task was that offseason for you?
Any new position can be daunting at times. Any new position can be challenging. I certainly didn't come into the position thinking I was going to turn over half of our 40-man roster in the first offseason. It just happened as transactions appeared, and we were able to be aggressive and make transactions that we thought made sense. And I give our ownership group a lot of credit for giving me the freedom to be able to do that. They didn't know me particularly well at that point, but they trusted that the decisions we were making were going to work out. And by and large, a lot of them did. Certainly, we made some that we wish we could have back, but we had a tremendous amount of transaction volume. It's probably going to be the busiest offseason I'll have for a long time as a general manager. But it was based on the transactions that came in front of us and what we thought made sense for our organization.
We mentioned before you went to Harvard. Teams seem to be loaded now in their front office with Ivy Leaguers. Aside from the obvious education you all received, do you think there's a reason that so many front offices have skewed in that direction?
I think there's more attention being given to the education level of front offices. I think even if you go back 10 or 15 years, there were still a lot of highly educated people in Major League Baseball front offices. I think because of some of the press that some of the more successful guys have gotten over the last decade and a half, the microscope is on a little bit, people with specific degrees or who come from specific schools. I frankly think that owners and front office executives are just looking to hire the people who are most qualified for any particular position. If that person happens to be from an Ivy League school, great. And if the person doesn't happen to be from an Ivy League school, that's great too. So I don't know that there's necessarily quite the influx of Ivy graduates into the game that the attention to that topic has been given would indicate. But I think we're seeing just a mass of sort of critical thinkers entering the game, and a mass of people who have experience dealing with large amounts of information and data.
If you're enjoying this Mark Feinsand interview, make sure you check out all the great conversations featured in the MLB.com Newsmakers podcast. You'll hear Mark and other MLB.com reporters chat with baseball's brightest stars of today and the past, as well as the game's best broadcasters and writers. You can download MLB.com Newsmakers today on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts by searching Newsmakers. Now, back to Mark Feinsand.
10 or 15 years ago, analytics seemed to be a thing that small market teams did more than big market teams, trying to find an advantage to
Yep.
match up with the bigger payroll teams. Now that every team has them, is it still such an advantage, or do you think front offices can use them differently to keep it as an advantage?
Well, I think critical thinking is an advantage in general, and I look at analytics and information in its entirety as a tool to help our critical thinking processes. So you're right, the gap between teams that were using some advanced metrics and teams that weren't no longer exists, because now everyone has access to very advanced information, and everyone is doing a good job using that information. Having said that, there is still a tremendous amount about baseball that we don't know. Teams like us and many others out there are doing everything we can to learn about those areas that we still feel very blind to, and they're numerous. So there are still many potential competitive advantages out there, and we're searching like crazy to be the first to uncover them.
That was actually my next question was, do you think teams are all out there looking for that next big thing? And what do you think that next wave could be? It seems like most stats have now been discovered. I'm sure there will be more. But is it just finding new metrics, or do you think there's another wave of something teams can figure out or discover that's going to give them a competitive advantage over others?
I have no question that there are waves out there that teams can discover to give them a competitive advantage. I have some ideas of in what areas they might exist, and we're doing our best to search in those areas and explore in those areas. But we certainly don't have all the answers here, and I'm not sure any club does right now. But given all of the unknowns about baseball, all of the unknowns about athletes, about human beings in general, I'm quite sure that over the next 10 or 15 years, there will be even more innovation in how we evaluate players and how we get to value than there have been in the past 10 or 15 years.
Seems like optimizing performance has been a big area that teams have focused on, sleep studies and things like that. Do you think that could be some place where teams try to find that edge?
Sure. Medical research in general is a place where I think the industry as a whole is looking to find an edge. As an industry, we're behind other sports leagues. We're certainly behind soccer. I think we're probably behind football and basketball in terms of some of the sports science techniques that we're using with our athletes. And so there's some catch-up to be done there. And teams that perform better in that space, I do think will get an advantage.
With analytics being used by all 30 teams now, it's also made its way to the fans with StatCast. Do you think it's making the way fans watch the game a little different?
I'm sure it's making it different, and I think what is what's helpful about those types of metrics and those types of statistics is fans can opt in or out of them. I don't know that we necessarily should be shoving those types of metrics down fans' throats if they don't find that an enjoyable aspect of the game. But for fans who do want to get a closer glimpse of what teams are looking at, the type of granular information that teams have, I do think it's a helpful advance for the viewing experience.
You wrote for the Harvard Crimson when you were in college. Does that mean you have an appreciation for sports writers that other GMs might not?
I certainly have an appreciation for how challenging it can be to work through writer's block, which I had plenty of times. I enjoyed writing. I still enjoy writing. At some point down the road, I wouldn't mind writing a little bit more than I do now. And so I certainly have an appreciation for what you guys do.
You've done, actually, before we get to your current team, you got married this winter. Congratulations,
thank
by the
you.
Way. And your wedding cake received a lot of attention. How did you decide to have a Miller Park-shaped cake? I'm somehow guessing that your wife hadn't been dreaming about that since she was a little girl.
So that was not my decision. as you might imagine, with wedding planning, a lot is not on the groom's plate.
Familiar.
This was new to me because I grew up in the Northeast, but in the South, there's the traditional wedding cake, and then there's the groom's cake. I'd not heard of that previously. So my in-laws surprised me with the groom's cake. I had no idea that we were going to have a cake in the shape of Miller Park. I saw it for the first time when I got into the reception hall. But as impressive as the cake was visually, it tasted just as good, which certainly made it worth it.
So there was a traditional wedding cake there as well.
There was also a traditional wedding cake.
Okay. My wife will be happy to hear.
Yes.
So you've done quite a bit to improve the state of your farm system since you got here. Has that process progressed quicker than maybe you anticipated it would?
We didn't really set expectations about how quickly or slowly our accumulation of talent would progress. All I knew is that we needed to accumulate as much young talent as we possibly could. And we needed to do that through all talent acquisition methods, whether it was the draft, waiver claims, minor league free agent signing, trades. And I think we've been able to capitalize on all of those. And so I'm pleased with where we are right now, but certainly We can't be complacent, and we need to continue to add to that stash of young talent.
Ryan Braun's been the face of this franchise for a number of years. How important is he to the Brewers on and off the field?
Ryan's been an incredibly important player to this organization, really, since the moment that this organization drafted him. I don't think that's changed at all. He's an elite player. Our community cares about him. He cares about the community. I think he's really found a second home in Milwaukee. And I think I would like nothing more, and he would like nothing more than for him to see us through this cycle and be part of the next great Brewers team.
Eric Thames didn't have great success during his two seasons in the majors in 2011 and 2012, but he had 124 home runs over the past 3 years in Korea. What about his game do you believe will allow that to translate back to the majors?
Yeah, we spent a lot of time examining Eric, trying to understand some of the adjustments that he made when he went over to Korea. Really, first and foremost, we were impressed by his ability to adjust his approach to that style of pitching. He became much more able to recognize and lay off breaking pitches than he had been previously during his time in the States. He modified his swing path, which led to more contact in the zone, which we think will also translate well back here. But we also understand that there's variance in a signing like this. There are more unknowns when you sign a player from a different environment than if we were to sign a player who had played at the major leagues last year. That's part of the equation on this. There are unknowns on both sides. There are unknowns on positive sides, and there are unknowns on some underperformance sides. And so we're eager to see how it plays out. He's been fun to have in camp so far, and we're looking forward to going into the season with him.
You clearly liked Jonathan Villar from your time in Houston, traded for him when you got here. Was last season's production even a surprise for you, though?
I think it had to be a surprise for everyone. I think really everyone in baseball. I don't know that I had really any inside knowledge on Johnny's talents. I think we all knew that he was an athletic, talented young player. We also all knew that the Astros had Carlos Correa and Jose Altuve, and he probably wasn't going to get a lot of playing time there. So we were happy to be able to acquire him, happy to be able to give him opportunity last year, and he took it from there. He really took advantage of the opportunity he was given, and he's now cemented himself as part of our future.
Orlando Arcia's rookie season was a struggle at times. How do you think that experience can help make him better?
Really, we brought Orlando up because we wanted him to get a taste of what Major League pitching was like, what Major League pitchers were going to do to him, how they were going to attack him. I think he saw it. I think he saw that these pitchers up here are pretty good, and there's a reason they're in the big leagues and not in the minor leagues. And so he's worked hard to make adjustments. He's worked hard on pitch recognition. He's worked hard to make sure he understands game situations and count situations. To better understand perhaps how pitchers are going to attack him. But this is an ongoing process. Right now, in his development, Orlando is a defense-first player. We think he can really make a profound impact on game outcomes based on his defense alone. And we're going to give him time to continue to develop his offensive part of his game.
Given the increased importance being placed on late-inning relievers, especially after what we saw last postseason, was there any hesitation in trading Tyler Thornburg, or did it seem like a strike while the iron is hot situation where you saw the opportunity to land an everyday player for them?
Whenever we trade a quality major league player, regardless of the position, there's hesitation. It's really tough to perform in the major leagues. Tyler performed at an exceptionally high level as a back-end major league reliever last year, and so there's always a degree of hesitation. In that particular instance, to be able to get guys back like Travis Shaw and Mauricio Dubon and Josh Pennington, we thought it was a trade we had to make, and we're pleased with the amount of young talent we were able to bring back.
With a young lineup and several of your top prospects getting closer to the majors, does this feel like the kind of season where the Brewers can make a push to contend for a playoff spot?
We certainly believe we have a number of very talented young players who are on the cusp of either breaking out within the major league environment or getting to the major leagues. How quickly or slowly that group coalesces together, we don't know. I don't think anyone knows as they go through processes like these. But I am confident that we have the talent level throughout our organization to ultimately get the organization back to consistent competitiveness.
They always say to be the best, you got to beat the best.
Yep.
Big challenge, obviously, having the Cubs in your division. How do you assess the state of the National League Central overall?
we think we're in the best division in baseball, and we want to make it a better division. We know that the Cubs aren't going anywhere, the Pirates aren't going anywhere, the Cardinals aren't going anywhere, and the Reds are getting better. So this is going to continue to be a very challenging position division to play in. That motivates us, that energizes us. We like the challenge of trying to compete in that environment, and we're certainly not backing down from it.
Good luck this season. Thanks for your time, dude.
Thank you very much.